Since deadly unrest gripped Syria more than a year ago, the government has frequently blamed its foreign enemies for directing a destructive militant attack against the country. Now, a growing number of Western media reports are proving just that. This is News Analysis.
Hostilities continue in Syria. Government forces are almost in full control of the capital, Damascus, now, after flushing out the foreign-backed armed groups who had been holed in there for a few days. And they are purging Damascus suburbs of the militants. To the north, fierce clashes are also underway in Aleppo, Syria's economic hub and second-largest city. Security forces say they've foiled several attempts by armed groups to infiltrate Syria from neighboring countries, including Jordan. Media reports have revealed that the CIA is training the armed men and providing them with communications and intelligence assistance, while Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey are smuggling weapons to these militants. Militants inside Damascus have reportedly been trained by former commandos of Britain's Special Air Service at bases in Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and elsewhere. The militants' potential leaders have reportedly received instructions on military planning and tactics, weapons handling, and communications systems. While the recent coordinated bomb attacks in the Syrian capital are being attributed to al-Qaeda, questions have risen as to why the U.S. and Britain, who declare themselves at war with the militant group, are now siding with the same group in their destructive campaign against the Syrian government.
Well, joining me now live from Damascus is Mr. Tahsin Al-Halabi, political analyst. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. I'd also like to introduce our guest in Washington, Dr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Tarpley. I'll put the first question to our guest in Washington, Mr. Tarpley. An Iraqi parliamentarian, Mr. Tarpley, has linked the terror attacks in his country, in Iraq, to the unrest in Syria. He says that rather al-Qaeda is responsible for both terror attacks, both inside Iraq and Syria. So does this mean that the SAS, the CIA, as was suggested in this report, are now siding with al-Qaeda against Assad?
Yes, certainly. And that has been the reality the entire time. We must always remember that al-Qaeda is nothing but the Arab Legion of the CIA, created in the early 1980s to fight the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. And if people didn't know that, they can pick up a copy of today's Washington Post here in Washington. And there's an article where the CIA is talking about their operations in Syria. And it says you have to be careful, because sometimes if you back a group, it can turn into some kind of entity that might turn against you. This is the way they tell the story. And they cite the case of al-Qaeda, so that the U.S. started al-Qaeda. This is now in the Washington Post. I would, in this case, though, certainly say that the Iraqi spokesman is correct. The kinds of death squads that you see in Syria and now in Iraq today seems to me come from the same matrix. They go back to the time when John Negroponte was the United States ambassador to Baghdad. And you'll remember that Negroponte's expertise, he's legendary. Wherever he would go in Central America during the 1980s, death squads would magically spring up. And when he went to Baghdad, everybody expected that death squads would appear there. And sure enough, they did. And these death squads were key in starting the Sunni-Shiite civil war, which relieved pressure on the U.S. forces. And his deputy, Ambassador Robert Ford, was then assigned to Damascus over the last several years, and it's widely assumed that Ford was instrumental in bringing the death squads to Syria. And this was all done under the title of the Salvadoran Solution. And from the very beginning, Negroponte and Ford regarded Syria and Iraq as one unit. So it comes from the same matrix, and the Iraqis are certainly right about that.
Right. Let's just go to Mr. Tahsin al-Halabi on this as well. In Damascus, Mr. Halabi, we know Britain has placed hundreds of troops on standby. So UK and US forces providing training for the militants there. At the same time, countries like Qatar and Saudi Arabia providing weapons for these groups. So if we accept all these reports as the, of course, evidence on the ground is also showing, can we say that an all-out war has actually begun outside the conventions of the United Nations Security Council on Syria?
Actually, those countries have already declared a very comprehensive war against Syria because they used all the boundaries of Syria, and most of those boundaries are a little bit hostile or not neutral, having certain hostility, like Turkey, like Jordan and Lebanon. And Israel, of course, it is the arch enemy of Syria, and Syria is considered the arch enemy of Israel. For this reason, it was easy for those countries to start smuggling weapons inside Syria, because two main factors they took in consideration in order to make all this not only unrest, all this terror inside Syria by the armed groups through smuggling those weapons. The first factor that they used, or the first point that they depended on, right, it was Turkey in order to bring weapons there and manpower also. Not only Al-Qaeda, also those refugees that they forced them, the Turkish and other Britain and USA and other conspirators against Syria, they forced a lot of thousands of refugees from Syria to go to Turkey in order to use them as manpower for such training and to bring more Al-Qaeda and more others, other manpower from Libya and from Tunisia and from Kuwait, as it was proved by the arrest of some of them by the security forces
so
in Syria.
So if such an operation is in place,
one factor.
Halabi.
The second factor was... is.
Yeah, I'll just stop you there, if I may, Mr. Halabi. Before you go ahead with that second factor,
is
what you're suggesting
that comprehensive...
here... Yeah, what you're suggesting here is that this all-out operation has already begun and it's in a working process. I'd just like to go back to Mr. Tarpley on this. Now, Mr. Tarpley, throughout the conflict, one writer was writing in an article I was reading that NATO has been waging a covert war, Washington directing everything, he was saying, Israel, France and Britain also directly involved, and Persian Gulf states, Turkey, Jordan, even Lebanon's March 14 alliance, according to him, and other Arab League countries involved in that operation.
Sure.
Where in all of this does Kofi Annan's peace plan stand?
Well, Kofi Annan is the smokescreen that's supposed to be used to hide, cloak the reality of this kind of an operation. I think what we've seen in the last week, though, is if not a turning point, at least a very important moment in this entire struggle. Military tacticians know the tactic of swarming. And swarming means that you can throw a lot of inferior forces at an enemy, with the point being to create chaos and confusion in which more qualified forces can then go on and take certain key points. And it looks like what was done last week was an attempt by NATO to orchestrate such a perfect storm, right? We had the resolution brought into the United Nations. If that had passed, that would have led to a collapse of some parts of Syria. We had the attempt to launch television warfare, video fakery, the Ben Rhodes plan, but the Syrians knew that it was coming. They'd been forewarned. They were able to work around it. There was the attempted decapitation of the Syrian leadership structure by, I believe, a Predator drone firing a missile. And not some suicide bomber coming into the building where that occurred, where the four top intelligence and military leaders were slain. But you've also got an attempt to bring down the currency, which seems to have misfired. But this question of swarming, the reports that I have now are that NATO brought in thousands and thousands of fighters from Libya in particular, right, but also from Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, a whole swath of countries. Mm. And they've essentially gone to the bottom of the barrel of the Al-Qaeda sort of patsy milieu in these countries. And they've dug them up and they've thrown them across the borders, right? Last week we had these reports that certain border crossings to Iraq or Kurdistan and Jordan had been captured by the so-called rebels.
Right.
And the idea was that this was going to bring about an overwhelming assault on the Syrian state. And the outcome of last week is that this did not occur, that the five-pronged offensive has so far not succeeded. And I think that is a real characteristic moment, that NATO threw everything they had, and somehow this has failed. The right. Syrian state did not collapse. Mm-hmm. Chaos and confusion do not reign. And the death squads are being mopped up in Damascus and will be mopped up in Aleppo.
Right. I'm just hearing that with us now live from London is Mr. Ammar Waqaf. He's from the Syrian Social Club. Welcome to the program, Mr. Waqaf. I'd just like to put this question first to you. We were discussing throughout the program up until now the role that the West has been playing in what's unrolling in Syria. How much truth, first tell us, is there in Damascus's claims that what's happening in Syria is militants being directed by Syria's foreign enemies from abroad in going ahead with a destructive campaign directed against President Bashar al-Assad's government?
Well, I think, well, good evening, and sorry to be a little bit late because of some technicalities. Actually, what is happening in Syria is not only, you know, some sort of a foreign intervention. It's actually some sort of a World War III that is happening like in a proxy way inside Syria. Everybody is fighting now for world supremacy, for, you know, gaining control of this strategic region over the Syrian ground. Nobody can deny that there are a lot of, at least regional players, who are doing a lot of incitement inside Syria in order to motivate certain people to get themselves alienated from the government in Syria and try to go up in arms and against it. The funding, supply of weapons and supply of non-lethal weapons, as some government has put it, is basically something that has been declared long time ago in public. It's not a secret anymore.
What does this show, Mr. Waqaf? A lot of people are concluding that these operations are the same as what happened before the Libya intervention. Do you think that for Syria this is also the case, that this is a prelude to a kind of intervention, or rather that a covert military intervention has already started, although it's not been made official by the UN Security Council? And if so, what is the ultimate goal?
Well, I think the ultimate goal, first of all, is to weaken the Syrian government. If it can fall for its own internal reasons, which can be induced from the outside, then all the best. If not, then let's change the game rules. Now, or a month ago, they started this WMD issue, the chemical weapons. They're saying that they're a bit concerned that it might fall into the wrong hands. And what we're seeing basically is that there is some sort of a paradigm shift that is taking place from intervening in Syria in order to help the poor Syrian people, which is very, very much vetoed by the likes of Russia and China and contradicted and refused by a lot of countries on right. the basis that it may lead and it should lead to more death, to a new framework which is saying that we need to intervene in Syria in order to secure these chemical weapons lest they fall in the wrong hands. So they're trying to intervene. I think the ultimate goal basically has been from the very beginning is a change of government in Syria. Nobody really gives a damn that about the aspirations of democracy and freedom of the Syrian people. Mm. It's all about changing the government in Syria into a more Western favorable or a Western allied one.
Right. Let's go to back to Damascus now, Mr. Halabi. We had our guest in Washington referring to the CIA plans of taking over TV channels for a misinformation campaign. And we earlier had the Ministry of Information in Syria talking about that and saying that there was such a plan and that the Syrian government has been made aware of it. Now, is this a prelude to, as some observers say, a coup d'etat in Syria? What are the plans now when we look ahead? A lot of people have been saying, looking at what's happening in Syria, everything is just short of NATO bombing of the country that hasn't yet happened. So what do you think is going to happen from this stage on?
I think now we have no any danger from such fabrication of coup d'etat or by the media or by certain video fabrication, as your colleague said. Now, as long as it was displayed and unveiled, so it is now out of being executed, because the people knew very well here in Syria, and the authority also is prepared for all possibilities. But what is the aim now of those countries that launching that a kind of third war against Syria alone here in the region, is to gain or to prepare certain territory, whether it is near the boundaries of Turkey. It will be the best for those countries, USA and Britain and London, or even another one near the boundaries of Iraq from the north, near a certain population territories for the Kurds there, the Syrian Kurds, or even through certain territory from Jordan. They need such few kilometers as a territory that they can bring some armed groups there and give them more sophisticated weapons, and to make then the propaganda of liberated areas, and it will be, as they would declare, protected by international law or by any no-fly zone on those specified territories if they would gain them. I think this is now the main step that all those participants in the conspiracy against Syria would deal on. And certain indications were declared from Turkey, deployment of anti-missile batteries there, deployment of more artillery or more forces from Turkey around those boundaries. And don't forget that the Israelis also are playing on the ground of the Jordanian territories there in order to prepare their role with Jordan, because nobody ignores that there is certain coordination between the two intelligence devices of Jordan and of Israel, according to Araba Accords, peace accords with King Hussein, late King Hussein. So I think with all those comprehensive programs and activities, now it is the decisive movement that Syria would be the victorious as long as it will protect all those boundaries in the very fortified way, and in Lebanon everything would be
well.
Okay,
that is the major question
Lebanon
now, isn't it? Whether Syria is going to be able to withstand that kind of attack. That is the main question. Let's just go back to Washington now, Dr. Tarpley. You said earlier on that so far the Syrian government has been able to stand against what I guess they're calling the conspiracies by its enemies. But how long before, for instance, we may see a kind of a bomb attack from NATO, a kind of extended military attack? Or is there even such a plan for these kinds of actions if other measures fail in Syria?
Just concerning the question of the coup, which you mentioned, I believe that the coup was supposed to take place last week between Wednesday and Friday, and somehow this did not succeed or has not succeeded so far. Now, when you have these swarming foreign fighters, people with minimal training and low military skills. If they try to take a piece of Damascus or Aleppo and hold it, a lot of them will not survive. And I think right now the mopping up activities of the Syrian army mean that a significant portion of those swarming fighters have either been killed, wounded, or captured. So there's not an endless supply of such people. Now, if NATO wants to escalate, to have a bombing campaign and to carve out these corridors or safe areas or coastal strips or whatever they are, that means an escalation, because that means going outside the Security Council, challenging really Russia and China. What are they going to do about it? Right. It is widely assumed at that point that President Putin of Russia would retaliate somehow. How? Nobody knows, but people here in Washington are afraid to find out, because they feel that there are a number of things that Putin could do that could make life very uncomfortable for the U.S. and the British. Now, the chemical weapons story is supposed to be a way to cover an invasion with the story, well, we didn't want to do it, but we had to do it in order to secure these chemical weapons. Maybe one way out of that is for Russia to offer small military units that could be used to secure the chemical weapon supplies. And right. I think that might be acceptable to the Syrian government, so that with a Russian garrison or a small force around these places, they'd be okay. Now, the other thing is, the longer this goes on, it creates problems for the attacking coalition, in particular Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is in many ways the most oppressive country in the whole area. It's much worse than anything that's been alleged about Libya or Egypt or Syria. And if you've got this constant revolutionary propaganda, will that seep into Saudi Arabia? Well,
right.
A couple of days after the attack on the Syrian security headquarters, we've had an attack on the Saudi security headquarters. The deputy of Prince Bandar has been killed, according to some accounts, and that attack seems to have been meant for Prince Bandar himself.
Right,
so we might see something begin to flare up in Saudi Arabia.
I'm really sorry for interrupting. I'm afraid we're running out of time. I'd just like to give our last comments to our guest in London, Mr. Waqaf, before we end the show. And that is, Mr. Waqaf, would you say that following the terrorist bombing referred to there that left four top security officials dead in Damascus, that the Syrian government can still withstand these militant attacks?
The Syrian government what, sorry?
Can it withstand these militant attacks?
Well, if I understood your question right, what we've seen, obviously, four top generals have been killed in this attack. What the Syrian government has showed is a lot of resilience, in a sense. The defense minister has been replaced very shortly. Today we've seen appointments of the security apparatus. And all these appointments are not surprising at all. These people who have just stepped up to take up the mission from their predecessors who were slain. Now, with regards to the militants on the ground, we've seen that the Syrian government have dealt a huge blow to them. I think they were sent into this sort of a killing zone in order to gain some media attention, and we understand that hundreds of them were killed and other hundreds and were captured and injured and so on and so forth. So the Syrian government has showed, if I'm answering your question right, I think the Syrian government have already showed a lot of resilience in dealing with the unexpected sort of events that took place in the past few weeks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ammar Waqaf, with the Syrian Social Club, talking to us there live from London. A big thank you to our guest in Washington, Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian, and also live from Damascus, Mr. Tahsin Al-Halabi, political analyst. And thank you very much, viewers, for staying with another edition of News Analysis from me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran. Until our next program, goodbye.